welcome to Open Door, an education podcast that throws open the doors, both physical and virtual, of classrooms from all around the world. I'm Chris Galley, and I'm here with my colleague, compadre, and co-host, Mr. Lee Blowers. Lee, how are things?
Very well, very well. Things are going okay as we approach, yeah. I don't know, week whatever it is of remote learning.
Who knows?
How have you been coping?
Well, thank you. Yeah, things are starting to wind down. I feel like we can almost see the end of the school year coming up on the horizon, which is nice in some ways. However, I also feel like we're missing out on some of those rites of passage that we often get at the end of a school year, you know, having sports day, end of year concerts, talent shows, that sort of thing. So it's a very bittersweet experience, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. But I have to say, working with yourself and lots of sort of tech-savvy people, it was great to see our virtual talent show that we had this year. So every year we have that talent show, and we managed to get that online for all students. And to see some of the talents that kids can come up with when they're not restricted to four walls was pretty impressive.
Indeed. Yeah, I think this was the first time ever in a talent show where we've had tree climbing, not once, but twice. it's really great to see that creativity. I think we also had unicycle riding.
Yeah, trampolining as well.
Yeah.
Which was
This can become a sort of permanent fixture of the school year where we just have a video talent show.
I think so. Yeah, I think, you know, some of this can be done live. Some can be done virtually. Let's throw it all together for some sort of blended approach.
I've got to admit, the final act in our talent show, which was a musical number composed by some of the grade 5 girls, was actually very emotional, and it was a really fitting ending to the whole event.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the girls you're talking about, very, very prominent in terms of student agency and action and doing so much for the school community, and often off their own backs. So I will say, yeah, it brought a tear to my eye to see them singing their song and with their own lyrics. Very emotional.
Lovely. It was really, really nice. Mm. And that was quite a nice segue, actually, into what this show is going to be about. So for this episode, we're going to be focusing on the idea of student voice. And this was sort of on the back of a Twitter chat that we hosted about 2 weeks ago now, which was on the hashtag Apple EDU chat, which happens every Tuesday. And so yourself and I, we got to host that. Yeah. How was that experience?
I mean, it was incredible, but I was frazzled, absolutely frazzled throughout. It is just ideas coming thick and fast and so many people jumping in, supporting each other, questioning each other, and then just, as I say, idea after idea. It was a phenomenal experience that lasted the whole week, actually.
Yes, it's one of those things. It does, in theory, last for an hour, but as a host, it actually goes on all week, doesn't it? As you're getting people liking and retweeting and commenting on things. But it's a fantastic experience to get participants from all across Europe, the Middle East, India, Africa, participating in this one chat, and just getting their experiences, their ideas. I certainly took a lot away from it. I don't know about you.
For sure. Yeah. Took lots and lots away. And ever since then, I think I've been questioning more what I'm doing and trying to steal little bits of other people's ideas. It was great.
Mm-hmm. And so we've actually stolen the time from some of the participants from that chat. And so we've asked two of the Apple Distinguished Educators who were involved to come on and have a bit of a debate in our style of an open door debate episode, where we ask some questions and have a roundtable discussion. And so joining us for this episode, we have Karen Irwin, who is a foundation stage teacher and ICT coordinator from a small town outside of Belfast, the Northern Ireland. And we're also joined by Mark, with a C, Faulkner, who is a reception teacher in Nottingham, England. So this certainly promises to be a really interesting debate. And for us, it's going to be really nice to get a perspective from the younger school, which we don't normally have on the show. So let's get into our conversation with Mark and Karen. So we're joined for the show by not one, but two distinguished guests. So let me start by introducing the first of our guests, which is Karen Owen. Hi, Karen. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. How are you, Chris?
I'm not too bad, thank you. So you're joining us from Northern Ireland. How's your lockdown experience been?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I think the weather has helped, I would say. So that's made a big difference to how easy it's been.
Definitely been able to get outside a bit, yeah. Enjoy some sunshine. And so you're the mum of three young boys. So I imagine they've kept you fairly busy over the past few weeks.
Yeah, it's been a juggle, that's for sure. Definitely a juggle, but I think we're finding our way now, so.
Oh, lovely. I remember in one of our text conversations, you referred to your Irwin Academy for Young Gentlemen back at the start of lockdown. Yeah. How has that gone?
That didn't last long. I don't know if it ever started, really. We had good intentions with great plans, and now we just try to get done what we can as we can.
Yeah, I imagine it's been difficult balancing the teaching and looking after the boys.
Yeah, it has been, but look, they've coped well. They're good kids, so.
Oh, smashing. And you've been pretty busy during this time. I've seen you've recently started a new venture with a group of ADEs from Northern Ireland called Blend Ed. Can you tell us a bit about this project?
Yeah, this started as a quick conversation last week on WhatsApp, and suddenly now here we are a week later. So we wanted to try and feed into the conversation that's happening in Northern Ireland at the minute about returning to school and a blended education and what that's going to look like. So yeah, the four of us who were ADs from Northern Ireland last year got together, and yeah, we're now going for it. We have conference planned for Friday, and it's very exciting. So it's taken off. It shows there's a real need here for people to chat and work this out, which is nice.
Yeah, it looks amazing. And so the idea of a conference is fantastic. And I think that's it's sold out, isn't that right?
Yeah, it's sold out within a few hours. Wow. So yeah, we didn't expect that.
Well, it sounds like that'll keep you busy over the summer for sure.
Yeah, it'll be a good project. So we're excited.
Oh, wonderful. And I'd also like to take this opportunity to introduce our second distinguished guest, which is Mark Faulkner. Mark, how are you?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you. It's great to be here. How are you?
I'm great, thank you, Mark.
You two sound so productive right now. I feel a little busy.
It's the illusion of productivity, I think. Yeah. Just keeping those Twitter posts coming out, it makes us look busy.
Yeah.
And so how's your lockdown experience been, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I behave like I'm training for an ultra marathon. That won't happen. My legs are just tired and can't wait to get back to work, I think.
So when's the ultra marathon gonna take place?
Oh no, there isn't one. I just keep going further and further and faster as the weeks pass by. So I want to go back to work to not have to run anymore.
And so you've also been really productive during this time. I've seen you've been posting lots of journals. I loved your rainbow project and is it Monkey Cow workbook as well?
Yeah, it has been productive in that kind of project-based work. Monkey Cow was a huge success. I partnered with a good friend of mine, but also a children's author, who writes online safety stories. So me and Stuart took his book Monkey Cow and turned it into a video. And the sales of the book we donated to Feed NHS. So that was a huge success. And in the 2 weeks, Stuart donated around £500 to the Feed NHS charity, which was great. And alongside that, I produced a bit of a workbook around online safety and password protection for young children. It was great. It kept me busy. It kept me my feet on the ground and focused on what learning could look like, particularly with online safety whilst children were at home. It was great.
Yeah, it's a really fantastic project and for a great cause as well. So I think between your running and your workbooks, I think we need to have a separate chat just to find out about how you manage to stay so productive. For this episode today, we're going to be having a bit of a roundtable discussion, sort of on the back of our Twitter chat based on Student Voice. And so we've taken this idea of Student Voice, which has been a growing focus within education over recent years, and it sort of fits within this broader umbrella of student agency. And it's all about enabling students to play a part in their own self-development, having a voice in terms of what they learn and how they learn, and just gaining ownership of their learning experience, which sort of brings us quite nicely to our first discussion question, which is, why is the idea of student voice so important within education? And also, how has the move to online learning impacted on this? I think to start with, I'll pass over to Lee. I mean, Lee,
yeah.
What do you think about this idea?
Well, I think, as you say, this has been something that's been growing for quite a long time, sort of this idea of student voice being so important in education. And I think, firstly, in terms of engagement, we talk about learning needing to be engaging. And I think student voice helps students become engaged in their learning, having a choice of what we learn and how we're going to learn that. And really importantly, how we're going to show our learning and understanding, I think really, really engages students. But I think the thing that's really interested me with the move to online learning has been, we're now able to give a choice of when we learn. So students with the choice of asynchronous and having some synchronous learning as well, students don't just learn what they want to learn, what they're interested in. They can learn how they're doing that, but they can actually learn when they want to, which I think has made a really, really big impact on some of my students. So I'd love to hear a bit more about that and what some other people think about that when.
So Karen and Mark, you both teach within the early years. How has the idea of synchronous and asynchronous learning balanced out within your settings?
So we've decided to do asynchronous learning just because of the age of our children and the thought that families are going to need to be involved probably in supporting our children as they do that. So we do not want to set times and expectations on them. So we are sending activities at the beginning of the day, and then parents and families can work on them as and when they want to.
Yeah, and that's very similar to what I've done, Karen, is this menu, this selection of activities that we pass out to our parents on a 10-day cycle. And it fits the routine at home. You know, the 9 to 3:30 doesn't have to exist in home learning. This can be when it best works for the family based on their work, their home life, the other children that they have, and being able to select what activities you do when, I think is just kind of breaks down that wall of school.
Yeah.
And is this something that you can see yourself taking sort of back into the classroom, Mark, in this idea of giving more choice of when activities happen?
Yeah. What we did for our remote learning was very similar to how we approach our homework expectations in school, and we have this menu choice of activities over half term, which is familiar to the pupils and to the parents. So we just extended that and built on that, so that, you know, it was familiar, but it was also approachable for our families. And I think we've just learned a lot about what parents can achieve at home with our input, with more input from us, and what parents can achieve that they can do with the resources available to them as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's sort of finding that balance, isn't it? And Karen and I, we were discussing before we recorded about this idea of actually having to prepare the parents as well as, you know, preparing to teach the children. And so is that something that's taken up a lot of your time during this experience, Karen?
Yeah, I would think a lot more planning needs to go into what we share, because we are educating the parents on how we teach as well. So we've put a lot of thought into how we explain things for the children, and also then a sort of background explanation for the parents as well.
So almost double the work.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah. Yes. And we don't have much to fall back on. There's not much plan, you know, there's not much of the online, you know, the way that we're working, we have quite a lot of structure, and we've tried to design everything to look well for the children. So that's all being done daily. You know, you don't have those resources sitting there already. So,
yeah.
But it's been fun. It's been fun.
It's definitely been planning. The planning has happened.
Yeah.
And planning how to help parents plan has been a big part of it. But I think with that has also been the success that we've seen, because we've taken that time to really consider carefully how parents can do this at home.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really, really interesting point, especially about the parents. I was watching a Chapters International seminar recently involving Guy Claxton, and he was saying how a lot of parents are taking this opportunity to become the teacher that they had in their schools. So I think it's an amazing thing to hear that you're both considering how do you help them be the teacher that you are for their students, rather than maybe the education that they had, which isn't always so positive for many of our parents.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's a really nice point. And just going back to what Mark mentioned before, so you were talking about this idea of choice boards, which you send out over a 10-day cycle. So what do those choice boards look like? Are they in some choices of different ways to do a particular activity? What sort of choice do the students have on those?
So we themed each menu around a story, and on the Monday we would film a short clip around the storybook that we was reading and looking at that week. And then on, the following 10 days, there are art activities, music activities, drama, simple writing activities, or some math linked to that book, which would be very similar to what we would have done in the classroom, still all kind of anchored around a key text. But the parents were able to see the images from the book. The children were able to see the story in some kind of sequence without us giving a reading of it. And then parents could just pick which of these activities were on the menu, which were just most appropriate for their week or their day or in their time. And these activities had different star ratings. So there was 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star choices. And the aim is to achieve 20 stars in the 10 days of remote learning. Mm. So, you know, there was just opportunity for people to do a couple of big things and also lots of little important nuggets of learning too, just such as write a sentence each day, maybe, or read an online book each, you know, every 3 days, just these kind of little tick them over activities as well.
That's really good. I like that idea of gamifying it as well with the stars, almost making it seem like a competition. You know, they got to complete the stars for the week. It sounds quite similar to an approach we take in upper primary, particularly in mathematics, where we use a chili challenge. And so we start off with the mild chili, which is normally the green one, and that's usually for everyone. And then building up the level of complexity, so we go to an orange chili, a red chili, and then a black chili, which is supposed to be the most spicy, if you like. But it's sort of similar to what you were doing, where we're giving a choice and just saying, okay, well, see how much you can challenge yourself within this activity. Is that something that you've been doing as well in grade two, Lee?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've had that. We've had the chili challenges just as you've been doing. We haven't had the gamification, but I really like that idea from a parent perspective, because I think it gives you an idea of how much your child sort of would be expected to do and what, how much they might be doing in school. I know I've had a lot of parents reach out to me saying, are they doing enough? Is this what you would usually expect? Is this good enough? So yeah, those stars that the children will definitely aim for will probably really help the parents to understand what's expected there as well.
Yeah, I like that. Moving on, and sort of talking a bit broader rather than just within the context of remote learning, and bringing this within to a classroom context as well, how do you all ensure that your students have voice and choice within their learning?
I think the early years foundation stage is a great place for teachers to look to for this kind of working. My classroom, just as I suppose any early learning setting would be, is naturally full of voice and choice, that we provide activities that are either themed or linked to a particular need of that class or those children. And though the role of the adult is to provide and then observe and then question. And I think just that whole approach to learning brings so much to the wider curriculum for any age group. You know, in my classroom at any time, art and design is happening at the same time reading and writing is happening. And it's that skilled practitioner approach to observe and reflect and analyse what's happening and respond to it in the moment. That's really important. And I think we've seen a lot of that happening with remote learning. And I think we can bring some of that back to that wider curriculum in any kind of age setting right now.
We would provide a lot of choice already. I guess that's how the foundation stage curriculum works. So we would be encouraging our children to make choices daily. It doesn't really matter how they learn, it's what they learn. So if they learn that through physical activity, through a game, through drawing, it's not the how, it's the what that they learn. So we do provide them with a lot of opportunities to learn in a way that suits them.
Yeah, I really like that idea of the what rather than the how.
Yeah.
Is that similar for you in grade two as well, Lee?
I think so. We do have a lot of choice. I think maybe a little bit less than you'd expect in an EC setting. And from what I've seen myself when I've gone visited. But I think where I would guess we maybe have a bit more voice. But that might be a very, very wrong assumption. So I'd love to know, Karen and Mark, what you think about voice in the EC classroom. How do you ensure that students have a voice in what and how they're learning?
It definitely goes on partly on what children are interested in. And I think sometimes voice makes early learning educators want to follow children's interests. But I think voice, sometimes children don't know they like something until you've given them some skills or some knowledge around something, around a new context or a new idea. So sometimes voice is the child's interest and we follow that, and sometimes voice is about children learning something new they didn't know before, and you can follow and build on that too.
That's a really good idea. And we teach in a inquiry-based context, so we very often start a unit by asking the students what they want to know or what they know about a topic, and very often that will help to drive the unit forward and that will drive the learning. Whether sometimes the challenge can just be the children aren't sure what they want to know, you know, particularly if it's a completely different unit to what they're maybe they've not been exposed to before, they they find it hard to generate these questions. And so I think that's our role as practitioners, isn't it, to help to try drive that curiosity and get them to ask the questions and find out what they want to know to drive the learning forward.
Yeah, and within our classroom, we would encourage them to keep asking questions, because as you say, when they start a topic, they can't really always be sure of what's coming and what they're supposed to be asking. So we would leave a little set of post-it notes at the back of the classroom near our KWL wall, and the children can draw a picture or write a question at any time during the topic, so that it's not just at the beginning, because I think as their interest grows, then their questions grow, which is lovely to see.
That's a fantastic strategy to keep that going, and for the students to feel safe and comfortable to be able to do that. How do you ensure that students are safe and comfortable to just get up and use that KWL chart?
They don't ever really sit down much to get up. So there's a lot of movement in our classroom, and that's just one place that they visit. So they don't really go, oh, I have a question, can I ask it now? They're maybe walking from role play to sand and go, oh, here's a question, and just drop it in on the way past. So it's quite organic. It's not really a planned thing.
Yeah, I totally agree, Karen, and I think that comes back to just that skill we have as early learning educators, that we are always listening to what they're saying and we're ready to respond. And I think those questions might not happen in a staged time, that we're just aware of what's happening around us in all these different areas, and you know, we have our ears to the ground and we're ready to jump on their questions and build on them, I think.
Yeah, and help them form their questions as well, because sometimes they know in their head what they want to ask, but they don't know how to get it into words. So yeah, it is a skill to figure out what they are thinking as well.
Oh, amazing. Well, like very skilled practitioners, I think you've kind of guided the conversation to my next question. But I'm really interested in knowing, how do you both gather feedback from students? Feedback about your practice, feedback about what they're learning and how they're learning. And then if you do have sort of a systematic way of gathering feedback, how do you take that into account in your teaching?
It comes back to having it comes down to having a really clear objective, that at the end of this learning, we want these children to know they'll be able to do X, Y, and Z. And our feedback, just in any learning, is by observing and watching what children can do, or listening to what ideas they have and what they know, and putting the steps in place so that they can achieve that. And it all comes down to observing and waiting and listening. I think that's the best practice that we have.
Yeah, and questioning as well. Yeah.
So you'd have sort of a minute by minute gathering of feedback. Have you had the opportunity to do that much online? As you say, you've been doing a lot asynchronous. How have you been able to gather feedback from students during this online remote learning period?
So I have made myself available every day, even though our ideas and our plans are uploaded first thing in the morning. I'm still available the entire day as a teacher to stay in touch with the children. So we've been using Seesaw as our method of sharing with the children, which has worked brilliantly. And the children, I suppose at the start, were asking their mum to type their messages for them. And then they very quickly discovered they could voice record and they could send videos. And that just opened up a whole new world to them. So now you barely see the parents. It's just the children sending you little messages and asking you questions and, you know, maybe taking you out to the garden to show you what they've been doing, you know. Yeah. So you do get a lot of feedback just by what they're keen to show you and excited to talk about.
Yeah, and I think in a very similar way, the software we've used is Tapestry, but it's that whole communication. They send the video or the photograph, and we are able to leave some comments and questions, just some kind of guiding tips to parents to say, this is what went really well. Can you tell me a little bit more about this aspect of learning? It might be handwriting, or it might be phonics, or it might be counting skill or a storytelling skill. Just giving them that next little piece to take that play forwards in learning. But within Tapestry, we're also able to tag the objective and the assessment that we've seen in that work. So I think parents now are more aware of what that development process looks like, and you know where their children sit and what their next steps are. And you know, it's been a very personalized time for learning with parents as partners.
Yeah, I think that's really valuable, isn't it? The insights that the parents have been getting into what their children can do, how their children learn. I think it's, you know, one of the ways we try to involve parents at school is we run a student-led conference every year. And it's definitely one of the highlights of the year, you know, where the students, they choose the work that they'd like to share with their parents, and they sit down, and it's always such a beautiful moment from the school year. Obviously this year that's not been able to happen, but in a way they've had just by far the greatest student-led conference ever, which has lasted 12-13 weeks, where they've been able to showcase their learning, how they learn, how they develop these skills, and to be able to capture that, whether it's through Seesaw or Tapestry or Shobee, has been really powerful. I think, you know, as the evidence that we've gained from this experience has been incredible.
Yeah, in a way, there's some things you know more about your pupils than you would have from being in the classroom, because you're seeing so much of what they're doing, and you're seeing their home life, and you do get to see a whole different side to some of them as well. Their wee personalities are different at home.
I think you see, you know, I've learned very much what kind of learning works best in the home when it's led by an adult, particularly, you know, this is for homework setting. What do parents enjoy doing at home that is learning? And if I'm going to set a homework task that's going to be phonics or math or a specific skill like literacy or math, what do I need to put in place that's the same for all those homes so they can achieve it? I've seen creative people can just be so free with that and can achieve so readily with the creative arts. But specific skills, people need so many different levels of kind of guidance there. And I've learned as a teacher what the best way is to communicate that level of support in the home so that everybody can achieve. And with that, I think technology is the great equalizer here. It's the platform that we can provide a standard communication for everybody to achieve that specific learning at home.
I think you've summarized this whole discussion really well there. And, you know, it's really difficult, isn't it? Particularly within an online learning context where you're almost trying to provide one activity, one assignment that in some ways fits all, yet can reach all of those different levels of needs and interests and skills within a topic. And perhaps making an assignment as open as possible and giving those opportunities for student choice and voice within their learning, you can meet all of those different needs. And as you said, technology is definitely one of the ways in which they can do that. Just looking back from some of the comments from our Twitter chat, I really liked one of them, which was just this idea of keeping the digital door open, which sort of goes back to, I think is what Karen was saying, you know, making yourself open all of the time, being open to student questions or doubts if a parent's not sure about something, if a link is not working to an assignment that you've posted, then definitely keeping those doors open is really important within this time. And so I think just moving on, how have you changed your approach to online teaching and learning during this time? What's been one of the things that you've changed, Lee?
Well, I think from the very beginning, actually the very first week was completely asynchronous for my year group. And then eventually, slowly, we started having Google Meets with the students. And one of the things I realized was the Google Meets were a great opportunity to introduce some new concepts or ask a really big question that we could sort of sit and discuss. And that meant that I had to start staggering the times that I was setting the work and scheduling the work is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So I would schedule certain pieces of work for after our Google Meet. So there's been a bit more sort of flexibility there and different times, and just having that opportunity to really have a discussion with the students, as well as having those asynchronous times, has really changed things. And I think students did give a lot of feedback about loving the as many opportunities to start their work when they want and do it in which order they want. That has helped me to adapt that. How about for you? What's happened in your classroom?
Well, for me, one of the feedback from the parents was actually posting the assignments the day before. And so they had an idea of how the day was going to be, which was adopted across the school. And I can totally appreciate that. You know, in the past, we were sending it out at 8:30 in the morning. But, you know, if you've got Google Meets to prepare for, live chats, then it's just best to have that preparation. One of the things as well that our students sort of requested was more collaborative tasks. You know, we were setting a lot of work which was just completely independent. And so we tried to figure out a way to adapt our teaching and to bring in some more collaboration. And so we use Google Classroom in the upper school. And that was a really great tool for them to be able to work on a small project together. We managed to sort out little breakout rooms in Google Meet so they could meet up together on a project. And I think it was just a really enjoyable opportunity for the students because they really missed working together as they normally would do in the classroom and having the opportunity to work towards something together. So that was a really great experience. What about you, Karen? How have you changed some of your approaches?
So I think in all of this, the most important thing is that the teacher is far more valuable than the technology. And it's okay to have the resources and the gear and the great ideas, but the teacher is crucial still to the whole process of learning. So I guess when this started, I'm naturally quite a shy person, and the thought of being on video, it's not my happy place. But after even just the first few days, I realized I need to be 10% braver here. I need to be on video. They need to see me. They need to hear me. And now I think my kids are worried I'm going to become a YouTuber before they do. I just being there, not just sending stuff, but actually being there for them as you would be in the classroom. So in Northern Ireland, we have a wee saying, wee natters. So if you have a wee natter, you're having a wee chat about something. And I do that a lot in school. We start talking about one thing, I'm way off on a tangent talking about something completely different. And the kids do love that because they want to hear about real life and they want to hear about, oh, by the way, did you know, sort of conversations. So I've started doing that a lot more throughout the day, just wee natters with them. So I just lift the phone and I go out and show them the strawberry plants and we just look at them and I say, look, they're still green, wonder what they'll be like tomorrow. And I just show them things that we're doing in our house and I just show them little presents that people have sent me and just try to keep that me in the classroom as much as you can. I've found they've appreciated, you get much more feedback on things like that than if you were to just post a sort of cold lesson plan. So I've taken that away from it.
I mean, you've just, Karen, summed up how important relationships are in learning. Yeah. And that's just been what I've learned this whole time, that people matter. and the relationship you have with them matters. You can't just post cold learning online and expect a long-term gain in learning. There's so much great software or you know, ready-made content out there to download and consume, but it is the relationship that matters. And those short little videos or audio clips you can send make such a difference. And I think just going right back to what Lee said in this first question here, the first part of his question, where, you know, initially I was very much like Lee saying, you know, it was all kind of free and, you know, there's no boundaries to time and these things. But actually we found within the kind of second or third week that some structure is needed, that we would post a story on a Monday and a physical activity on a Wednesday and some new reading materials on a Friday, and that just a kind of semi-structure was needed to give some kind of predictability to what was coming in the weeks. But so still remain the freedom of when to do them, but you know, this is what's coming, so you can plan a little bit too. And that's, you know, that kind of happy medium worked out for us.
That's great. I think, you know, the two of you, you've really just summarized what this is all about. And, you know, if we are silencing the student voice within their learning, then that's really going to impact on their motivation and their engagement with what they're doing, and just providing those small opportunities, like Karen said, to show them yourself, show them who you are. And, you know, you haven't just turned into a Google Doc, which is going to be your template for the day. I think for me, my highlight of the week is we always have a Wednesday check-in on the Wednesday morning. And it's just, it's not about the learning. It's just, how are you? How's your week been? What's been the positive? What are the challenges? And just checking in as a class, as you would do. Something that I hope we can continue as we go forward, just to continue those relationships going.
I've done similar. So each morning I post a little video just to sort of tell them what the plan is for the day. And then I always finish it with a question for the day. I kind of use it as a rule call to see who's there, see who we've got without, you know, being so overly who's here. So I ask questions, and you get so much from the answers. So some days it might just be use an emoji to tell me how you're feeling today, or, you know, ask me a question. That was one of the best questions I asked, and then I just sat and recorded a video telling them all the things they wanted to know about me. So I think that back and forth, how are you, how's it going, and if you can sense that there's a bad day, that you address it and you don't tell them, oh, everything's rosy, everything's fine, that you just sit down and you talk to them and you say, you know, this is okay, this will get better, we can do this. My motto in my classroom is we can do hard things. So it's stuck up at the front of my room, and I made a little classroom image for them that I sent home with we can do hard things right in the middle of it, so that they would remember that, you know, this is tough, but we're made of tough stuff.
I love that. I love you. We can do hard things. Our school motto is ready for anything. And this has just been one of those times where we have been ready for anything. Yeah, these mottos, I think, really, these school mottos really stand out now. This is really what we stand for and how we stand together. They've definitely stood the test of time.
It's fantastic. I'm hearing lots and lots about being physically present being so important, and it's really clear to me that both of you have found ways to be very physically present with your students. And I think the other thing that I really love, and with those mottos, is almost that sort of acceptance of being vulnerable. I think it can be very difficult as teachers, especially in front of parents, to be vulnerable and say, well, actually, we're still learning as well. And we're still taking feedback and trying to adapt. And I thank you both for your bravery to come on here and to talk about that. So for other teachers who maybe aren't quite as brave, what tips would you give to them to provide more student voice in their class?
There's myself, and there are two other teachers in my unit of reception, and we are, you know, the three of us are very skilled and we really complement each other. We're a great team, but this remote learning time has been my strength as a computing leader, and they have struggled to make videos and record their voice and show themselves at home in these things. And you know what? I've had to be very patient with them, and I've learned how to support them through just being that, like Karen said, that 10% braver to do something. And I just know that there's a trust between us, because when we're in the classroom, there's things where I need to be 10% braver to deal with things, and you know, they've got my back in the same way. And I think we've grown as a team. And I think if you're in a position where you need more student voice, you need to be 10% braver to find those colleagues in school and just take some time to observe them or ask them some questions or let them watch your teaching and do some kind of lesson study. Because there is a professional trust and a professional learning between us in school. And I think that's something that, you know, I've been able to support my colleagues in a way where, you know, giving back when they've supported me. And that's all it comes down to, is just sharing best practice and having that professional learning in a team.
What about you, Karen?
I would say that in this whole process, consider how much you see of your pupils compared to how much they see of you. And that's a difficult concept to get your head around, but you're seeing everything every day from every pupil. So you're getting hundreds of comments and videos and pieces of work, but that pupil is maybe only getting a few comments back from you or a few interactions from you, but your day is filled with doing that. So I've been really conscious of making sure that my pupils see me and feel like I am there for them, even though I'm there for 30. So we have done things like every Friday since the day we finished, we send a staff video home to all our school. And it can be silly, it can be thought-provoking, it can be whatever. We want them to see that we're here and to see the whole staff as well. But I would say, just use this opportunity, don't waste it. Analyze it and ask hard questions and think, is this going to impact when you do go back, what going back looks like? Imagine, it's a time to reimagine, I think, what our school situation can look like, and that's exciting. But I think in the midst of this, it's important to ask those questions.
Well, I think you've summarized that really well. This definitely is an opportunity for us to rethink some of our practice when we do get back into the classroom and, as you said, be that little bit braver, acknowledge our students a bit more. And so I look forward to seeing what you and your team on Blend Ed managed to share within your new project. I just want to take this opportunity to thank you both so much for joining us. It's been a really enlightening discussion. I think it's also been really nice for Lee and myself because we get to see the other end of the school, which we don't normally get to have the opportunity to engage with. So thank you for sharing your insights and your practice in an early years setting. So Karen, where can people get hold of you on the internet if they want to hear more about your amazing work?
Yep, so I'm KMI_edgy on Twitter.
And your Blend Ed project?
Yep, so it's blended_NI.
Oh, wonderful. And Mark, where can people find you?
I'm at Mark with a C, because my name is spelt Mark with a C.
That is literally the first time I realised that.
So Mark with a C is...
I'm going to admit, for the longest time, I thought that was just surname. I was really confused. Like, why is he Mark Foldner, but also Withersey?
Yeah.
And the amount of times it's Mark with a K that happened. Anyway, so Mark with a C. But also, you mentioned Rainbow and Raindrop, those little projects. So any of my kind of projects or lesson ideas are all on my blog at enabling-environments.co.uk, and everything, all the links are there, and the lesson plans and downloads are all freely available there.
Wonderful. It's definitely worth checking out. You've got such a fantastic range of resources. Definitely check out that Rainbow Project. It's a lot of fun. Really good idea. Well, thank you both so much for your time, and it's been lovely chatting to you.
Wow, that was an incredible chat. Thank you so much, Karen and Mark, both for your time. It was really, really valuable chatting with you. How did it go, Chris?
Oh, I loved it. I just love that debate style of episode. It's so nice to get lots of different perspectives from different contexts. You know, we had the whole spectrum of primary learning going on there, and also from you know, different physical locations. I love the way the two of them sort of summarized some of these big challenges that we are facing within this online learning context, and also how that can be put into place in a physical classroom environment. I loved what Karen was saying about just honoring what your students have to say, taking the time to listen to them, and also not so much focusing on the idea of teaching, but also just being a person with them and having those regular conversations that we normally would do in school. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
As you say, I think it was really great to have those perspectives that we often don't have. And I think listening back to myself, I can hear my naivety and misunderstanding of early years. And it's something that makes me think more and more as an elementary school teacher. I'd love to go and watch more of early years and to understand the practice. Because when we talk about voice and choice, I think they've been doing this for years and they've really been leading the way. And I think this is a great opportunity for so many of us to go down to those early years and see, you know, what does voice and choice look like? As Karen said, they're not often sitting down. They're not going to write a question and to stand up and write it. They're already standing up. They're already moving.
Yeah.
So many great opportunities there.
Yeah, that's it. In a earlier setting, they just make those choices with their feet, don't they? They just go over to where they want to go. In perhaps older years, that's more of a challenge.
Yeah.
One of the things which didn't come up within the chat was maybe talking more within the context of sort of older students, the later years of primary, is some of the work that perhaps you've been doing with student council, you know, particularly when we talk about student voice and having an input in terms of what's happening in the day-to-day running of the school. Student councils are really important, and I know you do a lot at our school with that. Could you talk a bit about some of your work with the student council?
Yeah, I think student council, as you say, is a really important way for students to have a voice. And one of the things that we've really tried this year with the student council is to make it as open as possible. So although we have a student council, we refer to them as the student council representatives, and really trying to instill that idea that, yes, you were elected, but you're not elected just for your own ideas. You're elected to share and to represent the ideas of your friends and everyone else in your classroom. So it's really, really important, I think, when we talk about student councils, to remember that they're there as a community, as a smaller community within a much larger community, and they're all coming in to share those ideas.
That's a lovely way of thinking about it, you know, just that idea of a representative. You know, they are representing their peers and they're sort of acting as their voice within that council. What have been some of the actions that they've taken this year?
So this year we've been supporting a homeless charity, which is something that one student in particular brought forward from his classroom and said lots of people have noticed sort of a larger number of homelessness around London. And so that's something that they really wanted to push. And another student who was very, very interested in trees and planting a tree, helped sort of turn us on to a charity that helps our local heath and do sort of animal counting and nature walks and tidying up. So yeah, they've been involved in those two things and really connecting with our parent teacher association as well, which That's has been great. Lovely to see.
I love how that all ties together, the student voice, the agency, and then sort of coming together with the action and actually making a difference. That's a fantastic project to have. I'd look forward to seeing what they do next year.
Yeah, to see how much we can do sort of remotely and online as well. It's been a bit more of a challenge. So yeah, to pick up some of those loose ends that have still been left there. Hopefully we can pick those up and really push on next year.
Wonderful. And of course, one of the other ways in which our students are having voice and choice within their learning is our grade 5 students are currently finishing their PYP exhibition. And we're hoping in coming weeks to have a bit of a chat about that experience. And so perhaps that will be quite a nice segue from this episode as we talk about student voice and choice directly within their learning as we talk about the PYP exhibition. So look forward to that in coming weeks. Well, Lee, it's been fantastic to chat with you on this episode. Where can people grab you on Twitter?
Please find me at Mr. Blowers.
Wonderful. And I am cgallyedu. Well, if you've enjoyed this episode, we'd love for you to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Drop a line on Twitter. You can find us, as we said, on our Twitter handles, or leave a comment using the hashtag OpenDoorPod, or leave a voice message on Anchor. And so all of the information for that will be in the show notes for this episode. Okay, so until the next time, thank you so much for listening.